ようこそどうぞ初めまして。
Hello everyone, welcome back to the Glorio Chat. Without question, the worst podcast on the internet.
Well, I don't know, you got those like ASMR.
The race to
I'm
the
not
bottom
say anything
is
about
competitive.
ASMR.
Yeah,
but
fair enough.
I'll just say that my argument is we haven't done one in well over 2 years, so we barely make the qualification of being called a podcast. So
fair.
That's my feeling on it. But anyway, it's good to be back. We could throw out plenty of the usual, you know, we're busy people, we have lives, blah, blah, blah excuses. But chances are, if you are listening to this, you probably just want to hear us talk about anime. So that is what we are going to do. We have actually been writing a lot about anime in our cute anime battle royale posts, which that's been a lot of fun. So if you haven't seen that, go check that out. Shameless plug for me. But there are some pretty big gaps in our coverage, I think, this season. There's a couple big shows we're missing. And, of course, I am talking about Pop Team Epic.
Well, I think Twitter's covered.
Anime shitposting nightmare of the
year.
What,
I don't even know what you would write about Pop Team Epic. Like, I think it would have to, like, especially on a weekly basis, it would make.
I don't think it could, to be honest.
You'd have to, like, write a...
Yeah, just be like a reference breakdown at some point.
I would appreciate
somebody
that.
Should do that. Yeah, somebody should do that. I would like that. But otherwise, you'd have to do like some kind of like super deep, like think piece on millennial humor and how that applies to Japanese culture or something like that. But yeah, we're not doing that. What we are going to talk about are two of the high profile, maybe even the highest profile shows of the season that we have not really covered past the first looks. And so we have Violet Evergarden, which is the big budget Kyoto Animation production along with Netflix, and also Darling in the Franxx, which is the collaboration between A1 Pictures and Trigger. And so I know we've been talking a lot amongst ourselves about it, and we've had quite a bit to say, and I thought it might be fun rather than just writing everything out. And, you know, we might write something later, but, you know, anything could happen. But I thought it'd be kind of fun to just get together on a podcast and talk about it. So before we get into it, then let me just introduce who we have on the pod today. I have my eternal co-host, Iroh.
Hello. We're back.
Again for the third time, I guess. Sure. And returning to the pod, the one and only G-Man.
Yo. I have complaints about robots.
You have complaints about robots, and we're going to complain about robots later. So how is, just before we get into that, how's the new season treating you guys? What have you guys been watching?
Mostly stuff continuing from last season, like Garo and Garo.
Garo's still red. Garo's still red.
Megas Bride. Yeah, Garo is still red.
To be fair, the shows continuing from last season are really good.
Yeah. I mean,
because I'll throw. I don't know if you guys are up on Osomatsu, but that's been real good.
I am behind.
And especially like the second half's been good, and I'm watching March Comes in Like a Lion, which is also very good. So there's a lot of good continuing stuff.
I kind of fell off of those too, but what I've generally heard is those are still pretty good. I think let it be said, right? Like we often talk about how bad anime is and how we should burn it all down, but like, you know, there are still decent shows out there. You know, it's, you know, we're not at the level of, say, professional wrestling where, you know, we are desperately scrambling for the like tiniest morsels of quality, you know, like, yeah. Like it's more like, you know, instead of like, you know, like if like, you know, just to use that analogy again, if wrestling is like, you know, a post-apocalyptic wasteland where like you're killing each other for water, you know, finding good anime is just like digging through the trash. You know, it's not.
we're not at that level yet. Yeah.
We're only dumpster diving.
Yeah,
right. We're not killing each other. Come on.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, we only criticize because we love. So.
Yeah, that's yeah. We want it to be better.
Yes, we know the potential is there.
I think there are, you know, some. You know, this is going to be, you know, probably stereotypical, but like, I think this new season is decent, but like, there is no like real spectacle, I guess, you know, in anime this season. And I feel like spectacle is why I got into anime. So like, you know, like there are a lot of like these very pleasant shows, you know.
Right.
Like,
yeah, that's,
you know, no hating. Like they are indeed very pleasant, you know, like, you know, watching, I think his name is Nishikata in Takagi. Takagi-san, watching him own himself every week is like is entertaining, but also like, yo, I'm on the third episode and I'm like rapidly kind of losing interest.
It's not anime of the year material, but
no, yeah. Or it's not even like changing up the, you know, the formula that much, I guess, you know. Yeah.
On the flip side, there haven't really been any strong candidates for hashtag hate watch either. So,
true.
It's kind of nice having a good baseline level of quality across the board. But I understand. Just there's not like a lot jumping out and, you know, really grabbing us this season either. So, but yeah,
you know, it's just like
we'll just have to play Monster Hunter instead of watching anime.
yes, Monster Hunter anime of winter season.
Yes, that's the best anime of winter 2018.
Monster Hunter, like Dragon Rider thing still going, or that end a billion years ago?
I know there's that.
You're gonna have to be way more specific on that one. I think. There was a lot of dragon riding like novel trash over the past.
I guess that was last year. Monster Hunter Stories Ride On.
Oh yes, they made a spin-off anime to go with the 3DS game, right? I think that's
yeah.
Oh, okay.
That's the story there.
We're talking actual Monster Hunter and not just random anime about riding dragons.
Yeah. But we should probably move on, or else this will turn into the Monster Hunter World Cast.
Let's keep it rolling here. We got a lot we want to talk about, so
yeah,
you know, like I mentioned, we wanted to talk about these two big shows of the season, and G kind of alluded to how he's got some complaining to do about robots. So let's get right into the first one. So Violet Evergarden, like we said, is the big Kyoto animation show of the year, which apparently they only do one a year now, but yeah, and I'm going to right now just throw up the spoiler flag warning, because, you know, if you haven't watched it and you plan on it somehow that you have, I don't know how you haven't watched it yet, but it's, you know, we're going to spoil it. So if you care, you've been warned. So basically, if you haven't watched it and you don't care and you want to know what it's about, it's basically set in like fake not Europe shortly after fake World War One, and you know, the main character, Violet, she was a soldier. She gets injured at the end of the war, and now she's recovering. The war's over, and she kind of has to get used to, and really not just her, but everybody's getting used to post-war life. So, it's a pretty cool concept as far as that goes.
It's a lovely concept. Like, that's the, like, you know, like, I know, like, I am the noted, like, anti-Kyoto animation guy, but, like, you know, like, legitimately, I think, you know, it's I think post-war stories are like super fascinating, and like I think it's a super, like, there's a lot of potential to it for the plot of like a good like slice of life, like in like not just slice of life in the way we know a slice of life in anime, but like an actual slice of life show, like about like a post-war country and its inhabitants recovering from it, I think has so much potential to it.
Right.
And, you know, well,
well,
I, on this post office instead.
Yeah,
it's kind of, Violet drops the ball on it in a way that's, you know, kind of deeply disappointing.
You can kind of tell from G tailing off there that, you know, we don't necessarily love the show. I think to varying degrees. I still like it. I definitely think it can be better, and there's room for improvement. But Yeah, it's not quite living up to expectations. And part of it, I think, is the expectations that we did have going in, which I think we all had certain assumptions that we made about what the show was going to be about. And
this is what happens when, like, the show description that gets parroted around by every site is, like, questionably translated from Japanese.
And yeah, like,
also when they're talking about auto memory dolls, my mind just goes to robots.
Yes, yes. Like, my, you know, my stance is, if your fictional setting is modeled after the early 20th century and it's clearly sci-fi and you're referring to things as dolls, I am going to assume robot of some kind.
Yeah, so to that point, you know, I believe it or not, I actually do research these shows before I do our preview guides.
Oh, well, you don't just have an immediate hot take after you
just,
like,
I'll just watch the trailer and have a hot take. I actually like look up things about the show, and I read several sources that, like you guys said, were talking about dolls and it sounded like robots. And I just want to read the Wikipedia summary as one example. So it says, the story revolves around auto memory dolls initially created by a scientist named Dr. Orland to assist his blind wife, Molly, in writing her novels, and later rented out to other people who need their services. Sounds like robots, right? While the initial function of the auto memory dolls is only to generate voices into text, a second group of people created a company that rented out beautiful, talented women who, while having the same function as the original dolls, also performed military-related tasks. Now, looking back on what we know now, you can interpret that second sentence as not being robots.
Right, that's not technical. That's not a technically accurate like summary. But
considering anime as a whole, that sounds like our killer lady robots. Also,
dog,
do
that sounds like a robot to me. You know, like,
and that sounds cool.
Yeah, well, no,
to like, a certain degree,
or
yes.
At least it can be. There's
interesting. At least
sure.
So, you know, it sounds interesting. Like,
there's
something to be said, I think, about like. I think there's something to be said about like not reading too much on media and like not forming too many expectations before going into something, but like also like, you know, like you read the basic premise to like get, you know, a feel for like for if you're interested in a thing or not, you know, and like maybe we all went in with like weird expectations, but also I don't think like we could be blamed for like making those assumptions, considering, you know, just what anime is as a medium and like what tropes it tends to fall into.
And I should point out too that along with that, there were the trailers circling around with a girl with robot arms. So that's kind of also an important
right. You know, part the part we didn't mention. You know, she's got freaking robo hands. You know, excuse me for thinking, you know, an android and not, oh, you know, Shibio, cyborg, my bad.
Right.
But
So just to clarify again, if anybody hasn't been following the show, it turns out, or at least I still have some questions, but it seems pretty clear Violet is not a robot, the main character, even right. though she does.
I don't believe there are robots
and
in that
there
show.
There probably are not. Right, I don't think they've revealed that the original auto memory doll was actually literally a doll on top of a giant typewriter. So
right, like a clockwork
attraction. Which is actually still kind of cool, but not the type of robot that we were expecting. So I guess my thought then is, I think whether Violet is a robot or not, there's clearly something going on with her. There's been kind of hints with her past, and, you know, why was she, we saw her like out on the battlefield, like murdering grown men with her bare hands. Like, there's something still going on with her. And I'm wondering if the fact that she's a robot or not really even matters with the type of story they're trying to tell. And I guess the question then is, like, you know, why isn't it quite working out then with, you know, what we're getting or how they're presenting it?
I think so. To avoid just going into full hot takes territory, I think the main issue is...
That's what we're here for.
Well, I think the problem is, like, is that Violet is, you know, whether she's a robot or just like, you know, deeply like trouble, you know, like suffers from like some real like troubling like PTSD, you know, that aspect doesn't actually matter. It's just the characterization versus like the world she's interacting with doesn't really work, you know, like she is emotionally troubled, but she's emotionally troubled in the way anime characters are, you know, which is like, you know, she's like almost comically robotic, you know, like
she literally doesn't understand human emotion. Like,
right. Which I think is like, there's maybe a way to do that. But like, if you want to do a story where like, you know, like, you know, intent of the author, what have you, but my takeaway is that Violet is like at least somewhat something of an analogy to like, you know, to soldiers returning from war, you know, suffering both like mental and physical scarring. And like, how do you like recover from that and find purpose in your life again, you know, after, you know, an event that traumatic.
She's also a cute girl who needs to know what love is.
I mean, I guess that's even the thing, like the conventionally attractive, like, you know, the conventionally attractive, like, but emotionally like robotic girl is it's a trope that's been around for,
that's like the, quite that's like the ultimate wife, right?
You know, like, like she's pretty but she's as emotionally stunted as I am, you know. Perfect.
But she's super devoted to the guy she loves.
Yeah,
right. But like, it's, here's the thing, like, you can even do all that, but I think it really just comes down to the execution of her dialogue, you know. Like, you know, when she's saying lines like, you know, beep boop, water is sufficient for hydration or something, it's like, it's like, yo, like, nobody talks like that, you know. Nobody, like, no matter how troubled you are, like, you know, no matter how traumatized you are, like, I mean, look, if there are actually people out there who talk like this, then my apologies, but like, most people, you know, like
a basic human interaction.
Yes. Like, you know, like, if nothing else, Violet has lived and traveled with Gilbert, right, for like at least a few years, right? Like this actually casts a weird light on Gilbert then, if he like inherited this like weird like child super soldier and like never taught her like any social mores, you know, like you know, Violet doesn't want tea. Like, are you telling me that like in their entire time of the war, Gilbert was never even just like, yo, Violet, you want to have a cup of tea? Like, what does that say about him then as well, you know?
Like, yeah, and they kind of indicate that he did too. Yeah. Like, they show, like, the very first, I think it's like the first thing we see is like the flashback of him in the marketplace with her when he buys the brooch, right? So like,
yeah, like, it's clear that like he cares for her,
right? So like, it seems like she would have picked up some of that somewhere.
It's like, you know, look, I know I've been shilling this manga a lot on the chat, but you know, it's why, like, I point to something for contrast is the manga Golden Kamuy by Satoru Noda, which is
anime,
you know,
coming
not,
soon.
Yeah, anime coming next season. I really, really hope it's good.
Is MAPPA doing that?
Wish MAPPA was doing it. No, it's the studio Geno that's doing Kokoku.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no. Okay.
They'll be doing it next season. So, you know, fingers crossed. But I don't want to get too deep in it because it's not the topic here. But it's basically, you know, a manga about, you know, war veterans of the Russo-Japanese War, like scrambling to, you know, to find this stash of gold, basically. And like, the majority of the cast are veterans from the war. And like, one of the primary themes of the story is like how that war like super fucked up each and every single one of them to various degrees, you know, like some of them, it's just violent tendencies, you know, some of them, it's just like visions in their sleep. And then some of them, it's like uncontrollable psychosis, you know, it's like tragic and crazy in, you know, equal measures. But the thing that all the characters like do that I think is important is that they all like still do human things in spite of like, you know, their physical and mental scarring. You know, they enjoy meals, they make jokes, they form relationships, like they are troubled and, you know, they are doing their best to deal with it, but they are also like humans. Still capable, yeah, they're still capable of like finding like joys and pleasures in life, you know. And I think that is like maybe the the weird sticking point for me with Violet Evergarden is that, like Violet is so robotic, it's not believable anymore. Like I honestly think this show would be so much more compelling if, like, they dialed back the, like, lack of emotion a bit and, like, let the cracks show a bit more. And, like, you know, who's to say that they don't do this later, you know, like, you know, your big climactic episode, you know, where, like, Violet cries for the first time and it's a big deal, you know, and it's got all that Kyo Ani, like, camera sway and hair flowing.
That's definitely going to happen.
And right. But, like, the problem is that, like, that payoff isn't going to be, or at least I'm not going to care about that payoff so much because I don't care that much about the character right now. And
right.
You know, I think at its core, that is my problem.
It's kind of an interesting side point to that, and I don't think we talked about this previously off the air, but her boss, what's his name? Claudia, yes, how can
Claudia?
I forget? He's kind of that type of character, and he's just not getting very much screen time. Like, I think one of the other very early shots we see is he's kind of showing signs of, like, PTSD, where he has some kind of, like, dream or vision with, like, blood and all that stuff.
Yes, yes.
And, you know, his way of coping is he goes and starts a business, and he's kind of got that smile on his face, even though every time somebody's not looking, he's not smiling. But, you know, he's kind of got that humanity to him. You know, would the show be more interesting if it was more focused on him or a character like him? And, like, Violet was sort of like the, you know, the catalyst driving the story type of thing. I maybe that would be a way to go with it. I mean, they're clearly not going that way, but I don't know.
Probably something like along those lines, or just, yeah, like we've been saying, the issue is that everything's so focused on Violet and she doesn't have a real character to herself, which affects everything else.
I think this also, like, in some ways actually speaks to the greater, like, more macro level problem with Violet Evergarden, is that, like, it's supposed to have taken place after a war, but beyond, like, these very, like, you know, limited scenes and moments, we don't actually get that notion. Like, you know, maybe the town it takes place in was, like, far from the front, but, like, you know, beyond, like, the occasional, you know, occasional veteran walking around with, like, you know, scars or, like, you know, a crutch, like, it feels like we don't actually see that much of, like, what this war did to, like, these people, you know, like not just on a physical level, but on, like, a mental and cultural level, which is a shame because, you know, kind of as you were saying, like, I don't think I would want Claudia as the main character necessarily. Like, I think, but I think maybe, yes, if Violet, I think there would actually be an interesting plot point to go with if, like, Violet was a little bit more like a conventional, like, veteran suffering from PTSD, because then you could have that good contrast between her and Claudia and, like, how do they deal with it on an individual level.
But, yeah, I could, right. I could see that. And I think we did start to see a little bit of that in the latest episode, in episode 3, where her classmate in the doll school kind of opens up about her experience with the war and her family. And so we could see more of that in the future. So, I mean, they could go a bit down that angle. I think the thing with Violet is they've, you know, like I said earlier, I still have questions about what she is exactly, if she's not a robot. Because we saw some weird stuff, like with the flashback where Gilbert gets her, for lack of a better term, when her brother gives her to him. And, like, you know, why is she some kind of, like, super weapon thing or something, you know?
Right. I kind of just chalk that up to anime tropes.
Anime bullshit.
I've been raised since birth to be the ultimate weapon.
But, like, I guess that's kind of the distinction they're trying to make, where, like, whereas somebody who's, like, a normal person that goes to war and they're, you know, changed forever and scarred afterwards, like, she was never a normal person to begin with. And, you know, maybe that's what's kind of, you know, making it difficult for her to have any character. I don't know. I'm grasping at straws here on how we can justify this situation. But
I think my feeling is that, like, in that case, like, instead of trying to come up with justifications for, like, her lack of personality, then maybe the show just shouldn't have, like, done the weird super soldier subplot in the first place, because, like,
right,
because, like, don't get me wrong, I love me some good ass, like, genetically, you know, or conditioned super soldier bullshit, you know, because, hey, I watch anime, but, like, it's clearly not going to be a major part of the story, or at least if it does come up, it's not going to come up in a way that, like, dramatically, like, upturns, like, what the story is currently about.
Yeah.
Right.
It's, yeah, I think it ultimately, maybe it's just an excuse to make her, you know, ultimate waifu, emotionless, type of thing, but,
emotionless, but good at everything.
Good at everything, but love.
So you can, so you can teach her.
But, like, I mean, we joke about, like, the Saber, like, appearances, but yo, this trope goes all the way back to even Saber, you know? Like, the petite warrior woman who is uncontested in the ways of war, but is unfamiliar to the ways of love, you know? Like, that's what this is, you know? It's just, you know, a more extreme version of it.
I should point out that Violet has two braid buns on her head, and therefore is not Saber.
Totally different.
It's a completely different character.
I wonder if that came up from, like, them, like, looking at, like, their character sheets and being like, wait.
Wait, throw another bun on. Throw another bun on. yeah, so just one final note that I want to bring out about that show. I hate the director. I have it in our notes with no other comment. So just for anybody that's not familiar, it's the same director as Beyond the Boundary. That was, like, his debut with and again, Beyond the Boundary, cool idea, but he just does it so flat and, like, dry and this past episode 3, I was complaining to Iroh about, like, there's the one scene where, like, the brothers, like, he's on the ground reaches and he, like, reaches his hand up into the sky and there's that shot and I'm like, you've seen, like, a million other, like every other anime ever, and I'm like what a hack. Yep. This guy's just a hack. I don't know how he got, I don't know, maybe he's got dirt on somebody at Kiwani or something. Because otherwise, all their other directors, I think, are very talented. And they have, like, so many.
Where is the director of Nichijou? And where is he? And why hasn't he come back to save us?
Yeah, well, that's another. I think that was, what's his name? Ishihara or something, one of the old guys, who is also a perv, but he did good with Nichijou.
Right,
but yeah.
Look, animators being pervs.
That's just a given, right? Sorry, G.
Yes. Yes.
All right, so yeah, you know, we'll see how Violet Evergarden goes. Like I said at the outset, I still like it. I think it could be better, and maybe it will get better. I don't know how high the ceiling is, though, at this point. But, you know, we'll watch it, and, you know, maybe we'll have more to say about it as the season goes on.
I think I'm going to keep watching, you know, like, at this point, just because, like, I don't know, like, might as well see how it turns out, right? How it pans out. But
yeah. And I mean, I don't think it's bad. It's just, like, there's so much potential there and we just want them to meet the potential. So,
indeed. Anime squandering its potential. Yeah. What else is new?
Imagine that. Speaking of squandering potential, we have another show to talk about. And that is Darling in the Franxx, which ends up being a very literal title, I realized. This is the co-production between A1 Pictures and Trigger, which is kind of a odd marriage right off the bat. A1 is... And I don't want to totally, you know, try to put them in a bubble, but because they do a lot of different things, but they're primarily known as, like, very mainstream you know, they're like the mainstream anime of the 2010s. Like, you know, you think Sword Art Online, they did Idolmaster, that kind of stuff. And, you know, you can kind of see their style in the designs with Darling and the Franks. All those characters look like they could have been in Sword Art Online extras. The and, you know, they're working with Trigger, who are, you know, sort of the, you know, the rebel bad boys of TV anime. And they have a, you know, they're very own.
That's a way to put it.
They're their very own distinct style, you know, that they have. Yes. And, you know, it's kind of an interesting thought of these people working together, but does it actually work? And so, I mean, again, let's just start with expectations. You know, what were you guys thinking about this show? We didn't really have a lot of details other than the studios and there was going to be robots and stuff. But
going in, I didn't expect much other than like cool robot fights, because that's like that's kind of what we know Trigger for, right?
Is yes.
This, that yes. sort of thing. Or like at least the mecha side of Trigger has looked like cool robots. But then what was the last mecha show that had like a good story, right? exactly.
I'm sweating bullets like, over here.
Like G-Recco?
I don't know, Gundam Build Fighters.
Yeah, exactly.
Iron-Blooded Orphans, right?
Like boy, we could do a look. We could do an hour-long podcast about Iron-Blooded Orphans, like no exaggeration. Like, oh, that is a troubling show. And yes, we could do a 2-hour podcast about the end of G-Recco. So.
Sure. But yeah,
I'm not sure the adjective to use. So.
It feels like Franks feels like a show from 10, 15 years ago.
Oh yeah. Oh,
and the
yeah.
like its vibe and everything.
It's like the whole like post Evangelion era. Right. Yeah, where definitely. Everybody
like this could have aired in the same season as like Aquarion.
Yeah.
You know,
everybody was trying to like make these like that's part of the well, we'll get to the part that drives me the most crazy with Franks, but the like kind of like faux philosophical sort of asides that Hero narrates over. Of
right.
Like,
you know, I'm a caged bird. And I like, can never fly you know, again. Also, like, flying you know, means getting into this robot with a butt inside of it.
Again, like, it's all Ava's fault. It's all Ava's fault. Ava... Evangelion killed Mecha. Okay, let it be known, like Mecha isn't the place it is because of Evangelion, and we may never recover from it.
I maintain that it was a good show.
Yes, I'll
take your word for it.
It's kind of popular to hate Ava nowadays a little bit, but it is actually a good show. And the problem is.
I don't hate Evangelion. I hate what it right. did to
the Ant. Problem is everybody tried to copy it, and you can't just copy. You can't do that again. Like there, you only get like one opportunity to really do that.
Yeah, it's just like you know, like I think like Iroh was saying, like knowing that like this was a collaboration, like right from the get go, and like knowing that like none of Trigger's writing staff was on this. And say what you will, like you know. The joke Trigger's writing staff, but like Trigger knows how to do like interesting characters, like not necessarily the deepest or like most well-rounded characters, but like you could like there is not a single Kill la Kill character like you could call like forgettable, like each one even if all you know about them is like boiling them down to one sentence, like oh the boxing guy, oh the tennis girl. Oh, like the bondage dude, like, like it's reductive, but it's also effective at like helping you remember like who these characters are, and like, you know, so like with that, you know, Frank's not having that aspect, that doesn't surprise me, but like, it was kind of a similar thing. Like I knew the robots were going to be cool. I knew like that part was going to be fun, and it was everything else that like I was. You know, anxious about, you know, like A1 is entirely competent, you know, like we,
it's you know, good stuff.
I throw shade at them, you know, because of like things like Sword Art Online, but realistically, like there is no other studio you would have trusted with that adaptation in terms of like that mix of like competency and like lack of like controversy. You know, they are
right. If you want if you want your big mainstream sort of technically sound type of production, they're really good at that.
Yes, but it's the writer that I think had us all worried. You know.
Yeah. So let's just talk about that for a minute, because as far as this, how the staff breaks down. So as G mentioned, like none of the Trigger writing staff is on there. And from what I can tell, and I'm not an expert on this, they're primarily there to make the robots. And you can kind of see also their touches in some of like the character, like animations, like their facial expressions. And there's kind of neat little cartoony flourishes here and there that are very Trigger-esque.
I mean, even more than that, I feel like it is immediately telling in what little robot action we've seen, mainly in episode 1 and 3. That like the second it switches to the robot part, like the framing and the way the shots are composed entirely changes.
Yeah.
You know,
you can feel if you're familiar with how both of them operate, you can kind of feel the difference immediately.
Right.
But as far as like the overall director is, I forget his given name. I think Nishigori.
Yes.
his previous directing credit was actually the Idolmaster, and say what you will about Idolmaster, it was actually very well directed. So I wasn't too concerned about that part of it. The problem was the writer, who I'm not even going to look up his name because I don't want to know his name. But his primary writing experience is working with I think 5PB, who is responsible for
semicolon shows.
Yeah, so it's like Steins Gate, Chaos Head, Robotics Notes. Which
Cultic 9.
Which, if the only thing you're familiar with is Steins Gate, let me just tell you that that was a complete outlier, and it's all trash.
That's not the one he wrote.
And he probably didn't even write. Yeah, I don't know if he wrote that. He's credited in there somewhere when I was doing the research, so I don't know how much he – but generally that was his background. And the only anime that he wrote was it last year or 2015's big smash hit Plastic Memories.
speaking of shows,
speaking of emotionless robot girls,
So if anybody doesn't remember Plastic Memories, go ahead and look it up on theglorioblog.com, and you'll get my full thoughts on it. But you know, it was a cool premise. It was about like these. It was these robots that had like a set lifespan, and they kind of like lived as your family member, or you know, they worked for you or whatever. And that, but after that lifespan gave out, like you had to shut them down, and it had a built-in sort of emotional base that they could have worked with, and it was garbage. Like the characters were garbage.
Plastic Memories could have been anime Blade Runner.
Yes.
It could have been anime Blade Runner, and it threw it all away.
There are a lot of levels I would have been satisfied with up to anime Blade Runner, and it did not meet any of them. But the problem, a lot of it was, you know, he's just writing characters by number. Like you had the tsundere guy. Of course, the main character was the emotionless waifu. And the main girl was, you know, the emotionless I want to know what love is girl, and like everything
but also I'm dying,
yeah, and also she's dying,
teach me what love is before my expiration date arrives.
Yes, exactly. And it was so like just by the numbers, and it was bad. So right away you can kind of
red flags on Frank.
Yeah, that's a big, because that's, and I should also just out of fairness mention that Nishigori is also credited as a writer on here too. But I don't know to what degree the blame goes there, but I can tell you, I mean, you can kind of see the proof is in the.
Right.
The proof is,
I mean, my understanding is that, my understanding is that Nishigori, you know, is also like an old Gainax vet, but like,
right.
You know, like he was like, you know, he was kind of like in a you know, kind of like an Amaishi-esque style, or not even Amaishi, but like he was an animator, you know, like he was an animation director, a key artist, you know, that kind of thing. Like,
mm-hmm.
You know, I don't think he ever, well, you know, who knows? Maybe people tell me I'm wrong. I can't look it up right now, but I don't think he ever directed while he was at Gainax.
Right.
You know, so like.
Even so, you can kind of feel the because I mean, it feels like an early 2000s Gainax show.
I guess what I mean is,
we're probably not blaming him so much.
No, but more like his past, you know, his now two directing efforts, you know, could just be an indication that, like, you know, I don't know, either growing pains or, you know, just stepping into a role that, like, you know, he's unaccustomed to, or, you know, perhaps, you right. know, to be more
that wasn't his
harsh, maybe not ready to handle, but
right.
I think the show, like, looks good and is, like, shot well.
Right, right. I think his origins as, like, a, you know, an old Gainax, like, you know, artist definitely shows.
And the frame is good, but to the content that is lacking.
Because, like, you know, at its best, like, I would honestly say, you know, Darling in the Franxx is maybe one of the best looking shows of the season. Like, it's just really well put together. It's, you know, it's shot well. It's like the designs are interesting. Like, aesthetically, I'm still really into, like, it's kind of like weird, like pseudo apocalyptic, like sparseness.
But it looks like
Star in the Geofront from Ava.
It looks like it looks a lot like Divebuster, and maybe that's because I think Zero Two is wearing a no-no costume. But
the mech designs are also.
I mean, yes, the mech designs in Darling in the Franxx are by Shigeto Koyama, who also worked on Divebuster, as well as you know, a couple other things like Captain Earth and
remember Captain Earth,
and Star Driver.
I think more people remember Star Driver than Captain Earth, but yeah.
Yes, yes. So, you know, if you look at the Darling in the Franxx designs and you're like, yo, they're ripping off Star Driver, it's no, the designer's just ripping off himself.
Right.
So
he has a type.
Yeah. He definitely does.
It does feel like a copy of one of those early 2000s, you know, robots as sexual metaphors type of shows. And part of that is kind of the getting to the elephant in the room on this show. And like I said, the thing that probably drives me the most crazy is how they pilot the robots. And I was trying to think of how most succinctly to explain this to anybody that hasn't seen the show yet and does not have a visual. And the best I could come up with is every robot has a male and female pilot. They get in the cockpit and they do it doggy style. Yeah. That's basically how they pilot the robot, right? I mean,
it's the most, it's not wrong.
Way
she straddles the
So like it's
objects and it's like the HUD appears on her back.
Yeah, so like
the lady assumes the position.
Right. So like literally the guy, of course, he just gets to sit in a chair like normal, right? But the girl literally gets on all fours in front of him, and you know, she's got like she basically becomes the dashboard. She's got the instrument panel attached to the back of her neck, and she like literally has handles on her ass that the guy grabs
the control handles come out of her butt.
Yes. So like
here's my problem is that if this were I know this project could never have occurred unless it was a collaboration, but if this were a pure Trigger production, you know they would have leaned into that in like the most like tongue-in-cheek
absurd
shitty Amaishi way possible. Like,
but this is like dead serious drama the way they're doing it.
Right, that's the problem, is that they're taking it completely serious. Like the director is looking at you like stone cold, like they pilot these robots doggy style. Like as if you were supposed to be like, oh yes, of course.
Yeah, like of course the woman can't fight unless she is like controlled by the man. I see. That makes sense.
Oh god. Yeah. You guys will just let me rant on this for a minute here. So, like,
yes, yeah,
the training bot.
Oh God, yes. So the training.
The training bot is maybe my favorite design in this whole show.
I'll bet that was a Trigger guy's idea. The training bot, like
the training bot, just looks like the tiny robot from The Witch Academia.
Yeah,
totally.
Don't say his little robot.
That was just
got a button.
Brilliant level of silliness. But in episode one. Because we actually don't find out about the piloting system until episode two. In episode one, it's got like the usual anime horniness where, you know, he finds Zero Two naked swimming in the lake and she seems cool with it. So, you know, whatever,
With a fish in her
mouth. Yeah, whatever. I mean, it's dumb, but right. You know, I can live with that, you know, in context with everything else. It's just like and the other thing is like we've seen we mentioned Aquarian earlier. We've seen other like sexual based piloting systems in anime before.
Yeah, totally.
But just like totally. this just seems so like degrading like to the women. Like they literally just become the dashboard of the robot, and like and the all of it is like G was joking earlier, but like literally the language around it is all like. Describes it as a sexual experience, and these are all like relatively young teenagers that most of them are not comfortable with this at all, and it's just super creepy. And I don't understand how we get here every time. But
so like all things anime, I think in the right hands there is a way to do this. Like, there is a way to explore, like, the, you know, relationships through the metaphor of piloting giant robot. There's certainly a way to do it. I don't, as someone who's not a writer, I don't know what that
it's
way is.
It's a very
is.
Narrow path, like, but sure. Yeah.
Like, it's kind of why I jokingly, you know, mentioned, like, if Trigger was doing this, like, they would find a way to make it work. And I'm not saying that they would find a good way to make it work, but, like...
They would find a Trigger way to make it work.
But like, Trigger and Maishi and his crew of, like...
Sex and violence with mock speed.
Right. Like, his crew of, like, energetic degenerates would have, like, found a way to, like, make it, like, funny and weird and probably stupid and somewhat offensive, but, like, at least, like, cohesive to, like, the tone of the story they were going for. Whereas, like, the problem with, like, Darling in the Franxx is, like, we're supposed to take this piloting system dead seriously. Or you know, it's not even the piloting system. We're supposed to take the metaphor dead seriously. But then you have moments like Hiro piloting the training robot, which has a fake butt installed into the dashboard, you know? Or, like, it's just...
God.
Like, and here's the problem, right? I thought the training robot bit was hilarious. Like,
but you're not supposed to think it's hilarious, I don't think,
like,
right?
But that's the thing, like, that... Because, like, that is, like, that... Like, that feels like that weird, like, Trigger smartness out of nowhere. Like... like, if you were to do this dumbass premise, like, of course you would do something like that.
But then he's like, and now I can no longer fly because my partner is taken from me I'm sitting in front of this plastic butt. Yeah.
Can we talk about the characters for a bit? Like, I actually, like, it really does, like, bother me just, like, how, like, cookie cutter the cast is.
Yeah, go for it, because, like, yeah.
Like Hiro as our protagonist, like, stop me if you heard it, like, mecha protagonist is a fuckboy, like... It's that part doesn't really surprise me because that has been a part of mecha anime as all this time. You know, fucking Amuro Ray was a fuckboy for at least half of Gundam before he got his shit together. Right. You know, like
Renton.
Yes, Renton Thurston was a complete fuckboy on like a spiritual level for most of that show. But the problem I have with Hiro is, like, unlike those other, like, characters who had, like, if not amazing, like, motivations, had at least believable motivations of, like, I like this cute girl, or I'm trying to not get killed, like Hiro's protagonist, like, I mean, Hiro's, like, motivation is just, like, I want to pilot the robot.
Why do you want to pilot the robot, Hiro?
Right, like, why does he want to pilot the robot? Is it just to defend humanity? Because if that's the case, he hasn't ever said anything like that. Like, he's never shown in this show any, like, indication of, like, he cares for, like, I want to protect my friends, or I have to defend, you know, the last bastion of humanity, or whatever. It's just, he just keeps going on and on about, like, oh, I gotta pilot the robot. Like, dude, like, every mecha protagonist wants to pilot the robot. Like, why do you specifically want to pilot the robot, you know?
So I don't think this is a good reason, but the way I interpreted it was they were all kind of just, like, raised, brainwashed by whoever the creepy papa guy is.
Right, I mean, episode 3 definitely confirms that, like, they were raised in, like,
basically they're as good as dead if they can't pilot. So,
yeah.
I mean, I guess in that in itself is a motivation. It's not a good one, but...
I would love for them to lean into that, though. Like, lean into, like, the desperation of, like, oh god, please, please let me pilot, because the alternative is, like, being sent to, like, I don't know, like, the factories or whatever, you know?
Like, it's not just, don't make it just, oh, if I can't pilot, I'll be useless. But like, as some like moral, oh, I don't want to be useless. But no, it's because then you're useless, and therefore we will dispose of you.
Yeah,
right. Like, I feel like if they leaned it, like that's the thing, right? Like, this setting is obviously meant to be like kind of dystopian. But I feel like they need to lean into it a bit heavier, you know, like really like kind of make it oppressive, you know, like because like if you have the element of like, oh, God, I have to pilot this robot or my life is forfeit, combined with like all the weird like expectations that people have with like, you know, with sex and relationships, like throw in that external pressure, like then you kind of have like a more interesting, desperate, like feeling setting that Darling the Franks currently doesn't have.
I realize this episode is a very, very unreliable way to pilot your robots. Think how many times they broke down in just this one episode. And like the other thing I was thinking is, if Hiro can just pilot the normal training robot and they can make that technology by himself, why do they even have to have all this? I'm just going to throw that out there.
Yeah.
I don't think there's a good answer to that. I mean, we all know why they have it, but like
right.
From a practical point of view, it's like they have the technology to put the controls in there for one person. I don't understand why.
I mean, look, as a mecha fan, like this has been a question that these questions have existed since the dawn of the genre's existence, you know, like if we have the technology to build giant robots, why don't we just imply, you know, why don't we just put that technology into like a tank or a plane, right? Like, you know, or if we're capable of creating like AI drones that can like shoot lasers, why don't we just put that AI drone AI into the robot itself instead of the pilot? You know, like these are those kind of like questions that you could easily dismantle the entire mecha genre with, like in a matter of minutes.
Just tell me that their special magma weapons are powered by teenage horniness, and I'll be good on
that. Right, like really, that's all the show really needs, right? Is like, oh, like the training robots can't handle the output of these weapons, you know, or something like.
Is that what it was in like Star Driver? Everything was powered by like libido.
Something I don't remember a lot about Star Driver. Star Driver was kind of a fever dream. Like,
yeah.
I never did watch that, and I probably never will. Yeah, so there is one potentially interesting point, and I don't agree that this is going to happen, but that people have brought up. But it's a very popular theory, and I will shoot holes in it later. But the idea that in the first episode, Hiro pilots the special robot with 02. He blanks out. We don't see what happens. He doesn't remember what happened. Nobody says what happened. So the theory is that he was basically the bottom, and he was in the girl's position in the robot, and that's going to be like the big like plot reveal. And some people are like, oh, maybe they'll make some bold statement about gender roles and stuff like that.
Yeah,
and
no,
they're not going to make a bold statement. But also,
I saw
also,
people if that was actually twist, saying that.
Okay, great. Well, yes, but like,
yes.
Brief aside, like I think anybody who's like casting shade nobody was arguing in good faith that like this show was going to be something special. I think I just want to get out there ahead of it. You know that like. I don't think anybody was like anybody expected this show to like do anything special with its writing or its narrative. Like nobody actually thought this was going to be like, you know, some like really bold statement about like relationships. Like, yo, it was the writer of Plastic Memories. Like we were all just here for the robot fights, you know? Like I was just here to see a robot fucking use this crazy badass magma lance and like press the trigger and like eject a casing. And like all that cool dumb shit. That's all I'm here for. But anyways, I guess here's the thing. Like if that twist actually happened, it would be hilarious to me for the same reason that the training robot has a fake butt in it is hilarious to me, because like it's the kind of dumb thing that like you know that a director would try to pass off as like bold and like unique and interesting, but would totally fall flat on its face in execution, especially with a show like this.
Yeah.
We have not been set up to take something like that seriously based on what we have.
No.
Right.
And, you know,
so I'm just going to say episode 3, we see the inside of the cockpit.
Yeah, I was going to get
Mitsuru is in the male position, let's say.
Yeah. Yeah, I was going to get to that because we do see in episode 3 him piloting it. But is that why all the guys die when they pilot with her?
Right. I mean, that's so the thing, right? Like, the theory could still theoretically hold water.
And we still don't see her in the cockpit.
True.
And I think part of it is because they're trying to rub in that Kira's getting NTR'd. But,
can we talk about, like, the piloting the robot is a metaphor for relationships and, like, how they are leaning into it in all the, like, the most, like, boring, predictable ways. Like, because, like, the same thing with, like, Ichigo, right? Like, her character, right? Like, you know, her drama now is, like, the feelings of inadequacy, of being unable to partner with Hiro, and, like, how that's affecting her piloting, and, like, it's going to be some really, like, dreadful love triangle bullshit that, like, nobody wants, like, to deal with at all, but, you know, just, like, this show is trying to use, like, piloting the robots as, like, a metaphor for relationships, and then using that metaphor in, like, the most ham-fisted, clumsy way, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yeah, there's not a single original thought in any of it. It's all stuff that, if we haven't seen it all combined in this way before, at least it's stuff that, you know, it's predictable. Like, of course they're going to have a love triangle thing. Of course it's, they're going to have, you know, they're going to sacrifice this guy we don't care about to show, you know, to make the main guy jealous. You know, that's, yeah.
And I guess that's the other thing is that, like, you know, again, even that part ties back to, like, my problem with the characters. Like, the characters aren't interesting. Like the guy who tries to pilot with 02 this week, like all of a sudden, like, this personality comes out of nowhere, you know? Like, episode 1 and 2, he's just kind of, like, in the background, you know, as, like, just another one of the pilots, and then all of a sudden this is the episode where, like, he reveals that he's, like, a really snide, shitty person, and, like, not that that's not surprising, but, like, there's no build-up to it. Like, there's no, like...
Yeah, I think,
like...
Yeah, speaking of no build-up, there's all the talk this week about, like, oh, we looked up to you as our leader, Hiro.
Right.
He gave, like, us our names and stuff. From, and I'm like, whoa, they didn't treat him like this the first 2 episodes. And there was, like, no, like, indication. Like,
there would actually be a potentially interesting subplot to write about, like, a cast of characters dealing with the fact that, like, the guy they had assumed would be the protagonist, like, fucking up and being shitty, you know? Like, there's something potentially interesting about that idea of, like, the guy we entrusted our lives to, who gave us our names, who was our leader, you know, like, because it kind of reflects a kind of, like, a real world, like, school thing, right? Of, like, the kids who might have been, like, really popular or, like, really, like, fun to hang around with or, like, really trustworthy in, like, middle school or high school, ending up, like, you know, failing to, like, maintain that persona in college or whatever is, like, a very real phenomenon, right? So, like, there is a way they could have leaned into that in a way that was interesting, but as you were saying, Iroh, it comes out of nowhere, you know? Like, it feels like a thing they just shoved into the start of this episode to, like...
I realized nobody had any reason to listen to Hiro ever.
Right, right.
So, more wasted potential.
Yep.
Yeah. Like, I think at this point I will keep watching because, like, the robot fights are pretty good. Like,
dinosaurs versus robots. What could go
wrong? Yeah, hey, the fight in this week, this fight this week was pretty rad, you know? Like,
you know, I think, like, I'm just in it for the train wreck factor, but yeah, hopefully we can get some cool...
I mean, yes, the train wreck factor there, but
hopefully,
like,
we get some cool fights.
I guess the thing is that, like, if absolutely nothing else, like, this is the first, like, 2D animated, like, robot anime I have seen in an extremely long time, like, or non-Gundam, like, hand-drawn anime, robot anime in a very, very long time. Like, like even Bones kind of gave up on it after Captain Earth. Like really the only people left in the industry that are still doing like hand-drawn robot action are Sunrise, mostly for Gundam, and Trigger, I guess, or like, you know, the remnants of Gainax, you know, like even Studio Kara and, you know, Anno have moved on to like, they still use 2D. They still use 2D a lot, but like they use CG to supplement the action a lot, you know, like, so and in a way,
Trigger
like,
doesn't really, at least they haven't really done mecha anime.
Robots
splashed
like
it in there
before,
every,
yes,
at every
true.
Opportunity that they can get, but yeah.
Definitely. I guess, yes, I say Trigger, but I'm mostly speaking to like the pedigree of the people that work there, you know? Like Maichi, Sushio, Yoshinari, they all worked on Gurren Lagann. They all worked on, or some of them worked on Diebuster, you know, like this, like the old guard, or it's weird calling them an old guard, but you know, the old guard of like 2D robot animation, you know, like, and so if nothing else, I will be watching Darling in the Franxx because like, you know, we were joking about like how it feels like an anime from 10, 15 years ago, and like even down to the fact that the robots aren't animated with 3D,
right?
Kind of reflects that ethos, I guess. And like,
yeah, that part of it. I mean, that part of it is appealing. It's
so for better or worse, I might be sticking around just because like it's going to be a train wreck, but like hopefully it'll be a pretty nicely animated train wreck, I guess.
just like Keith Niver.
I didn't even watch that one. Like I took one look at that and I was like, not for me.
Yeah. So one final note on Darling in the Franxx. The manga adaptation is done by the same artist. They got the artist who does To Love Ru. So it is,
yep.
You hire that guy for one reason and one reason.
Yeah,
only.
And yeah. From the bits of it I saw, it is basically To Love Ru. It's not like they just, oh, I like his art style. No, they wanted him to do exactly what he does with his work. So that kind of gives you a, if anybody out there that's still clinging on to any hope that Darling in the Franxx will have some kind of like actual meaningful statement to make, I think that kind of gives you. And you know, I would love it if they, I just like for the record to say that I would love it if they were actually trying to make some kind of, you know, big gender statement.
Oh,
or something.
Yeah. Hey,
so
look,
I'm not saying,
like,
I'm not saying I don't want that to happen. I'm just telling you it's not going to happen.
Right.
I mean,
look, if 12 weeks from now we're doing another podcast and we're all like, yeah, man, yeah, you know, Darling in the Franxx really turned it around. You know, it was really amazing that like it managed to do things that bold and, yo, that robot fight was hella dope. Like, if that's what we're saying, like 12 weeks from now, then hey, that's awesome.
And, yeah,
but
then I will fucking eat crow. But
yeah, but
yeah, I'm
you know,
willing
just
to
like, watching.
I'm willing to take that bet or not take that bet.
You know, it's just like, yeah, it's just like watching anime as long as we all have, like knowing what anime is and like what it tends to be. Like, based on these first three episodes, like I don't think I've ever or. An anime turning it around from like these god awful first impressions is very rare. Like
that's why we call it, that's why they have the 3-episode test, right? That's usually when
right.
You've
like it
got a good idea of what's going on.
Yeah, like it doesn't happen often that a show manages to turn itself around that quickly or like that dramatically. So like.
Yeah, the
look, we all wish Darling in the Franxx was good, or we all wish it was done purely by Trigger, but like
you know. Let's play the blame game.
Oh yeah. Well yeah. As fun as it is to reduce the blame game to it's all A1's fault, I'm sure there's plenty of blame to go around for what's.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, like I'm more likely to blame the writer on this one. You know?
At the very
like,
least, you're complicit with it if you're working on it.
Yeah.
But
oh, for sure, I'm not saying Trigger would have done, you know, sex robots any better. I'm just saying they would have done it in a more entertaining way. You
in
know,
less creepy, more slightly more
like. Oh, I don't know. It probably would be still been just as creepy. Like it's just it would have been like trashy and crass, but also like. Probably like endlessly entertaining to like look at, if nothing else, you know.
Yeah.
But compared to what we've actually gotten.
Yeah. Well, we'll see how it goes. I would not get your hopes up, everyone, but we'll keep an eye on it, and you know, depending on how things go, if we feel like we have more to talk about, you know, I would like to keep doing some more podcasts on a regular basis, one way or the other.
And finally get it.
Now that we have some tools in place that should make this pretty easy. I'm going to say that now before I stop this and then everything blows up and stops working. But, you know, we would certainly like to keep up with it that way. I kind of like doing that with these shows, and, you know, maybe we'll, you know, I don't know if we'll end up writing some posts later as shows die off in the battle royale. I may have some more time to write about some things.
I would like to write about Darling the Franks. You know, I was, you know, just real life stuff. Yeah. I was busy, you know, moving, so
yeah.
Didn't really have time to write about, you know, the
same reasons we haven't done on the podcast for 2.5 years. But yep,
yes,
that is that is how it goes. So, all right, I think that pretty much covers everything we have on the list here. Any final thoughts from you guys? Anything else you want to mention before we go?
It's tough being a Mecha fan in 2018.
Yes, but the pain continues.
Indeed.
We persist somehow.
Well, we'll have to maybe one of the podcasts we can talk about actual good mecha anime. What people should watch, but yeah.
In 2018, I don't know, dude.
Well, not that came out.
Probably
not that came out in 2018, but
maybe
do like a pilgrimage to Mecca.
Yeah, yeah. If I ever podcast. Get back on pilgrimage to Mecca one of these days, you know, like maybe deciding to watch Zeta Gundam was a bad idea because that is 50 episodes of Tomino being his Tomino ass self, and.
Yeah, that is kind of the.
It's
I don't know. I might take another 2 quarters of Jureko, maybe.
Sure. It's okay. Look, it's 1980s Tomino, which
like very true.
It's a different breed. It's a different flavor. But
yeah, that's kind of the problem with those old shows.
Or you know, like we could, you know, like awesome. Look, we could even just do a podcast about like the other anime this season that are actually good. You know, if not ever.
Talk about the South Pole Girls.
That is a...
Oh, well, in that case, you know, maybe we don't need a podcast.
Well, in the meantime...
Or you might need to grab some other members of the blog to chime in since...
In the meantime, if you'd like to hear our thoughts on A Place Further Than the Universe, a.k.a. South Pole Girls, you can check out the Cute Anime Battle Royale podcast, or not podcast, post, that we are doing every week. Mm-hmm. And please participate. You can, you know, cheer on your favorites and, you know, again, shameless plug here. But yeah, that's been a lot of fun. So, you know, join in on that. And, you know, if anybody is actually listening out there, you know, please let us know what you think about, you know, us doing a podcast. You know, I've been trying to look for other ways to do some new things with the blog other than just writing about episodes every week. And, you know, any feedback, whatever, would be awesome. So let us know. And I think that just about does it.
Mm-hmm. Sounds good.
All right, everybody. Thanks, guys, for being on the show, and we will catch you next time.
Yeah, thank you.
Bye.